This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
All right, you can text the show, 713-572-4610. People enjoy Take-A-Mania. That was fun. If you missed it, you can rewind on the Odyssey app, or you can listen to the Payne and Pendergast podcast, our Bad Take of the Week segment called Take-A-Mania. We do it 9 o'clock on Fridays. So the NFL, Seth, put out their top 10, or NFL.com, not the NFL, their media arm, NFL.com, put out their top 10 games of the 2025 season. We don't know when these games are going to take place yet. We'll find out next Wednesday. Some of them will probably find out Monday and Tuesday. The NFL has already said they're going to intentionally start leaking some of these games on Monday on some of their various, with some of their various outlets. You know, one day NBC is going to be leaking a couple of them, Amazon, etc. The Texans make the list here with one of the games that they're going to be hosting this year at NRG Stadium, and I'm curious, I've got the list of their home games in front of me here. The one game for the Texans that cracks the list is number eight on the list. You know, the ones ahead of it are Kansas City and Buffalo and Philly and the Lions. A lot of the ones you would, a rematch of the Super Bowl, they all are ahead of the Texans. Eighth game that NFL.com says they're most looking forward to, the Texans hosting the Denver Broncos. That's the one game in the, on the Texans schedule where you've got division games. They play road games against Kansas City this year. They actually host Buffalo this year. They play Baltimore this year. Now, maybe Baltimore might not be one you look forward to because last year it was 31-2 on Christmas Day. But the Denver Broncos, and that is an interesting matchup, though, the Denver Broncos, a playoff team with Bo Nix in year two.
Right.
Are you excited about that game?
Yeah, I'm excited about it. Now, we've already had the Sean Payton versus D'Amico Ryans 2 years ago.
Yes.
Because Payton was the guy that acted like he was too good for Houston. Well, at least via his mouthpiece, Colin Cowherd.
Right.
That's what it seemed like.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, there's a lot of scuttlebutt that the Broncos liked D'Amico Ryans, but D'Amico just flat out said, no, I want to go to Houston.
Yep.
So there's a little bit of drama there, and now both teams have done well and improved and made the playoffs. So this feels like the first real matchup. The first year that Peyton was in Denver, he was playing with an inherited quarterback that seemed like he may have hated, and
who threw three picks in that game.
Russell Wilson threw three picks in that game. Yeah, so this year it feels like the first real D'Amico versus Sean Payton matchup.
I would agree
with classically
that.
I would think it would be one that where D'Amico doesn't care or think one bit about the fact that he's going against Sean Payton. Where I feel Sean Payton seems like the kind of guy that is like extra emotionally invested in trying to
maybe
prove the Texans that they screwed up.
Maybe. Yeah. I think both guys landed in a perfect spot. And I, you know, there was a big part of me that thought Payton going to Denver was just a cash grab. You know, they're paying him a huge, they're paying him like $20 million a year. It's Walmart money. They're just paying
over
crazy.
Over 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Like it's a crazy contract. Sean Payton's done
That's
a good
five
job.
Years, sorry. 5 years, $18 million per year.
Okay, yeah. Is it $18 million? Okay, so there you go.
Yeah.
So Payton's done a good job there. I say that begrudgingly because he was. I found him at that juncture where he was looking at jobs to be very unlikable, at least from a Houston perspective, you know?
Well, it was partly just because Colin Coward took a shot at the Texans' ownership in a way that just it made it look, you know, Coward did his classic thing where he just – he was crapping on the Texans when it was really easy to crap on the Texans and acting like they're an organization that just can't get it right and doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah, yeah. But Payton always kind of came across as a know-it-all when he was on TV, I thought, at times. Just to rub me the wrong way. He's done a good job in Denver. He's done a really good job. I mean, they were a 500 team his first year there with Russell Wilson, like bad Russell Wilson at quarterback. And then last year they made the playoffs with Bo Nix. And I know I felt like that felt like a reach, taking Bo Nix at 12, the sixth quarterback taken in that draft class. It felt to me like they were doing what you rightfully accuse NFL teams of doing in these last several years, which is drafting guys who should be going on day two, drafting them on day one because you're reaching for quarterbacks.
And I don't accuse them of it. I guess I wouldn't use that word just because I think that I understand the strategy of that you just have to. I like to look down on the quarterbacks themselves who get drafted in the first round, especially when it's like Kenny Pickett who acts like he's owed something because he's a. It's like, no, dude, you're getting drafted in the first round because teams are so desperate for quarterbacks.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, they take a swing on quarterback every chance you get until you find the one you need, and it looks like it might be that guy with Bo Nix.
It might be Denver. Denver and Buffalo might be the most interesting home games on the schedule. The division opponents, like none of them are good enough this year. I may end up eating my words on that one if the Texans have a down year and they don't win the division. I expect the Texans to win the division. So I'm not. You know, I'm normal excited for the division games. Like, it's always fun when they come in here because it's a division game. They play Denver and Las Vegas at home out of the AFC West. I guess Las Vegas is a more interesting team now than they were before the month of April, you know, when they traded for Geno Smith and they drafted Ashton Jeanty.
Well, San Francisco at home, I think there's just San Francisco lost its luster. I'm not sleeping on the 49ers.
I'm not sleeping on it either. And you got the D'Amico angle with that one, you know, D'Amico teacher against student kind of thing with Kyle Shanahan.
The away games, the Texans kind of, like as it looks right now on paper, and we know that this changes every year. Good teams end up being bad and vice versa. But the away games are where the Texans have right now some challenges because they face the Chiefs on the road. They face the Chargers on the road. They face the Rams on the road. They face the Ravens on the road.
Yeah.
And then the Seahawks. Look, the Seahawks were a winning team last year, but a 500 caliber team last year. But Seattle's just a hard place to play.
Yep.
So it's the real juicy stuff is on the road.
No layups there on the road. And the other three games on the road, you just named the five non-division games. We know that the division games, even when the teams are bad, are going to be challenges.
Yeah.
You know, they're division games. Like, so that's, you know, the Colts game last year in week one, you know, ended up being a game that came down to the very end. You know, Tennessee played them tough a couple years ago on the road when the Texans were on the road. So, boy, that is... I hadn't looked. I only had the home games written down just because of this whole Denver take here. The two LA teams, Seattle, Kansas City, and Baltimore.
Yeah. Ooh. And based on Vegas win totals, the Texans have the eighth hardest schedule right now.
Oh, wow.
So, if the division stays as weak as it's been, you get a break from being in the division. But the non-divisional opponents this year, it stacks up pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
And that's, again... I just can't say it enough times. Who knows? The preseason strength of schedule always ends up looking a lot different by the end of the year.
The Tampa Bay game at home is kind of a sneaky one. You know, that's the 17th game, you know, if you will, that they're playing. That's kind of a sneaky one as well. Yes, it's a tricky schedule, man. I got to go through the quarterbacks at some point. But it's a tricky schedule, no doubt.
The fun thing though is how good the Texans were defensively at home last year.
Yes.
And if you think about the quarterbacks that they made look. I mean, Josh Allen had one of his worst career performances in Houston. Mm-hmm. Jared Goff threw 5 interceptions. Tua Tagovailoa turned the ball over how many times? 4 times, 5 times in that game?
A fumble and 3 interceptions, yes.
Yeah.
4 times.
So, they made really good quarterbacks look really bad. The guys that they'll face at home this year, like most notably, are, newly rich Brock Purdy, perhaps. They're going to face Josh Allen yet again.
Yep.
Baker. Who are the other intriguing ones?
Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield, Bo Nix.
Yep. Yep, Bo Nix.
Geno Smith is intriguing to see exactly how he does in that new environment.
100%. Kyler Murray they're facing here.
And the last time they faced Kyler Murray at NRG Stadium, it was when Kyler Murray was coming off of his injury and didn't look – He wasn't in shape yet. He wasn't in playing shape. Right. For a guy who relies on his legs a lot and also was learning a new offense and everything, by the fourth quarter, he kind of petered out. So you'll get a different. Yeah, these are some good the names on the jerseys, the logos might not be as intriguing for the home opponents, but the quarterbacks, there's some intrigue there.
Quarterbacks are intriguing, and it's especially intriguing to follow up on your point, Seth, that they were so good against good quarterbacks at home last year. Can they replicate that? I mean, they were historically good at home against some good quarterbacks. Like Jared Goff threw 5 interceptions in a game that they won, the Lions, but still, 5 interceptions. Josh Allen's the MVP of the league. He had the worst game of his career in his MVP season against the Texans at NRG Stadium last year and was terrible in that game.
The only guy who was immune to it was Lamar Jackson, but luckily they face him on the road. The Ravens, man, the Ravens have been the litmus test for this team in the last couple of years. It's the Ravens are the team that all of a sudden, either in the playoffs 2 years ago or at the end of the season last year, made you think, okay, they're maybe not quite as far along as I thought they were.
They played them 3 times, and none of the games, since D'Amico got here, they played them 3 times, twice in the regular season and once in the postseason, and none of the games are close. None of the games are close.
In the regular season game in week 1 2 years ago was at least, that was
close at halftime.
Everybody was new, and it was C.J. Stroud's first game ever and everything, and it wasn't. That one, you didn't expect to win that game. Yeah. You were kind of happy that they put up a fight for as long as they did.
Yeah.
But, the last 2 times they faced the Ravens, it's been a wake-up call.
Ironically, the only other quarterback to have a good game at NRG Stadium last year from a road team, they won't have to worry about this year because he won't be the starter anymore, and that's Will Levis. Will Levis had a big game against them. I mean, he threw a pick 6 in that game. He threw for 278 yards and a couple touchdowns.
Yeah, and he got sacked like 12 times.
He got sacked 8 times. He got sacked 8 times. He threw a pick 6 to Jimmy Ward. That was the one blemish. But
it was the number of sacks in the first half alone that was
7.
7 sacks in the first half, and it was one of those weird Texans games they had last year where they did a bunch of picking off Jared Goff 5 times, but still losing the game. All
teams,
this statistically improbable.
They had 3 games last year where the stats afterwards. I think the Green Bay game was the other one. No, it might have been the Jet. Whatever, they had the Lions game and the Titans game for sure. Where the afterwards there's these tweets like previously teams that did were 342-0. They're now 342-1. Like, what are we?
Yeah. We won the box score. That's what matters.
Yes.
Yeah, just ignore the points part of the box score. Yeah, we really took it to them.
Oh, my God.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
If you're ready for a new job, let Express Employment Professionals help you. Express is already hiring for summer jobs in a variety of industries. Job seekers never pay a fee at Express. Go to expresspros.com to find your location. That's expresspros.com.
question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America for America.
Hey, I'm Tank Sinatra here with my co-host,
Investigator Slater.
And we would like to tell you a little bit about our podcast, Psychopedia.
It's true crime infused with comedy.
Making it a crimedy.
I do extensive investigative research and go deep into the darkest corners of the human psyche.
And I'm just here to lighten things up a little bit with humor, baby. You know, never at the expense of the victims, though, obviously.
Come join our family of little psychos over on Psychopedia. Available on the Odyssey app or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
All right, we got to pick out an adopted, undrafted free agent for Seth Payne this training camp. I don't know what our hit rate is on the undrafted free agents you've adopted making the team. I don't think
a single one has.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of parent?
I'm a sucker. I'm like a guy with low self esteem.
Could be
dating sevens, and I'm stuck in Fourville.
Deadbeat, undrafted free agent dad. You are. You're a horrible parent. All right, so let's find the next undrafted free agent here that we adopt. Here was Nick Caserio with us on Wednesday this week when Seth asked him give us some advice. Give us a couple recommendations in the undrafted free agent pool.
There's a couple guys in there to have an opportunity to potentially compete for some reps. I would say Tafuna, the defensive tackle from Utah, done some decent things, 6'3", 300 pounds. Good playing style, has some toughness to him, really good kid. And the receiver from Minnesota, I know, probably be an uphill battle there, but Jackson, he had a really good career. He kind of falls into the football player category. Maybe didn't run fast relative to some others, but really productive with his opportunities. He did a good job this year and then in years past. As well, so those are a couple guys.
Okay, so it's hard to get Nick to gush about anybody, any rookie. Yeah. Like Cade Stover's the outlier. Remember last year, Cade Stover, Nick in the press conference after they drafted him talked about all the elite traits that he had, and so it's interesting because like one out of every like three or four or five, Nick, even just every day, like non-rookies, like you ask him about guys and he gives a very measured evaluation. Then you're asking about Danico Autry and the guy's beating people up in a back alley and he's a bad MF-er. Like it's very interesting to me sometimes when Nick goes over the moon. I like it, but he's very measured on the undrafted guys. Understandably so. It is an uphill battle, especially for a receiver to make the team. Seth, before we dig into this undrafted crop, Todd McShay had a very different tune about Daniel Jackson, the receiver out of Minnesota, yesterday on his podcast.
The Houston Texans brought in undrafted free agent named Daniel Jackson, wide receiver from Minnesota. He was at the combine, okay? Quicker than fast slot, okay? Like, when you watch him, it's like, he's one of my Twitch guys. I love slot receivers. I love Twitchies. He didn't run a 40 at the combine because he's not the fastest guy in the world. But I talked about that twitch and the quickness and the body control. He ran a 4.07 short shuttle, Mitch. You know what that was at the combine? No one talked about it. No one talked about it. Second fastest of all the wide receivers. Then he went and ran the 3-cone, 6.78. It was a fourth fastest of all the wide receivers. Those are important drills.
Okay.
They are important drills. When we were talking with Nick about Jalen Noel and his measurables and everything, and then we talked about Wes Welker and his measurables. Wes Welker ran a 4.740.
Right.
You wonder why Wes Welker went undrafted when it came to just top end burner speed. But when it came to, I think with Wes Welker, it was the 20 yard shuttle. He was in the 99th percentile. All that short area quickness. Yes, Daniel Jackson has those things. The big question though is, he's on a team now where like he's got classic slot receiver traits. He's smaller, but he's got really good short area quickness. He's on a team that traded for a slot receiver and then drafted a slot receiver. And where is the spot for you? And then this is the key, has limited special teams experience.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
okay.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. His chance and his opportunity to actually make the team is going to have to be on special teams most likely. But I think could totally be a guy that's on the practice squad.
Yes.
Because he doesn't have all the measurables that make him a huge prospect, but he did produce in college, and he's got a certain savvy to him that you're looking for smaller, quicker guys. He's just got an understanding of the spacing and finding the soft spots in the zone and all that other stuff that coaches love to see on tape, but you got to prove that you can do it in the NFL.
He has the makings of being one of those guys at training camp, Seth, that when it comes to media watching the training camp,
oh yeah,
that after a few of the practices, we're like, huh, okay. It's Daniel Jackson.
Because he becomes Graham Mertz's go-to guy.
Yeah.
Graham Mertz just loves him. And Graham Mertz has been working out with him already before. Yeah. So these two develop a relationship.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, oh, boy, that, I'll tell you what, Graham Mertz might push for a starting job this year.
Okay.
If he can just bring Daniel Jackson along with him.
That's funny.
Did you see him out there versus those other undrafted rookie defensive backs?
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
All right,
yes.
So are you sold on Daniel? I mean, Nick didn't go over the top with his sales pitch about Daniel.
Yeah.
Hey, he's got an uphill battle.
I got a couple. So it's almost like when you go into a shop and you're like, you have any of this discontinued item? Like, I don't know. Let me go look around in the back here a little bit.
I might have a Daniel Jackson back here. I might.
McShay, though,
pretty good sales pitch by McShay.
He mentioned Junior Tafuna.
Yeah.
Nick did as well.
Yes, he did.
Junior Tafuna, like, this is... Okay, if you watch Junior Tafuna on film, especially if you watch his highlights, you might be like, oh my gosh, this guy's got everything I want. He uses his hands well. He's strong. Look at that. He's got a physicality to him. He's Polynesian.
He's a steal.
Oh, this is everything I want in a defensive tackle.
Polynesian.
Except he's 300 pounds. So it's when he's, and he's not, you know, he's kind of, he's athletic, but not enough to, you know, be looked at as a pass rushing defensive tackle.
Right.
So he does some really good things against the run, but he's undersized.
Mm-hmm.
I almost look at him like a higher upside version of Kurt Heinisch.
Okay.
I think that he does some things really well, and he might end up only being a rotational player in his career, but he's got to figure out a way to be just, he has to be immaculate with his technique, because when he doesn't use his hands well, he gets knocked around a little bit.
Yeah.
But there's definitely something to him.
Yeah.
Like he's got a good feel for it, and he wasn't blessed with incredible size.
No, but that's a group that, I mean, that's one of the older groups on the team. You know, if you're able to hang around, like Tommy Togiai hung around last year and ended up playing in playoff games for the team and making plays too.
Right, right.
You know?
Any of these guys, I'm not predicting that they're going to be the next Arian Foster.
No, but if they can hang around, you know?
No, and it's a classic too. One of the biggest things with rookies is just, do you know your role? Do you play your responsibilities? Do you know the playbook? Because a lot of the, when it comes to the rotational players, they just want guys they can trust.
Yeah.
So him versus, when he has opportunities in preseason games, maybe to go against starters on other teams or just in the padded drills during camp, that's where he's really going to just have to flash and show that by NFL standards, he's an undersized defensive tackle.
Right.
You know, he's, for a guy that he looks kind of like a run stuffer, he's small for a run stuffing defensive tackle, but he can make it if he's really nails with his technique.
Yeah, it's a good point. Just so you know, 6'3", 300, small. For defensive tackle. This sounds big.
If you're not a good pass rusher.
That's right.
You know?
That's right. That's right. What about this Eli Cox?
Cox is intriguing because he, and just by the way, the two guys, Eli Cox spent 6 years in college.
Okay.
So Tafuna is 24 years old. He spent 4 years in college. He's from Utah, so I'm wondering if he went on mission already. That's always a good fact. I love talking to these guys about their missions.
Yeah.
If he is Mormon. I don't know if he's Mormon or not.
Right, right.
But he's from Utah, and he's a 24-year-old rookie.
The Venn diagram favors him having gone on a mission, yes.
So Eli Cox spent 6 years in college and has played guard but settled in at center and is very, very, very athletic. Some of his combine drills were some of the best scores of a center in the past 3 decades.
Mm.
But he didn't produce like a draft prospect in the NFL.
Yeah.
So I think there's upside there with his athleticism, and you wonder how much of it was coaching, how much of it was just who knows what his injuries were or whatever. But there's definitely something there. That's a great guy to take a flyer on as an undrafted free agent. And I think he probably chose the right team to come to because it's anybody's guess who the starters are on the interior offensive line, and especially at center. I think that's a wide open competition, and depending on which guy wins the job, I think that they might see Eli Cox on the practice squad is a guy that's got some upside to him.
Yeah, I think it's funny. Look, the three guys you just mentioned, the undrafted guys that are going to be on the grass today practicing with all the, you know, with it's Texans rookie minicamp today. You know, if I were an undrafted guy and I'm an interior offensive lineman, I would look to go to the Texans. If I were an interior defensive lineman, I think the Texans – there's no great spot for any of these guys to land. Daniel Jackson's the most interesting one just because, as Nick pointed out, it's an uphill battle to make the team, and yet, you know, like after the first four guys, after the two drafted rookies and Nico Collins and Christian Kirk, man, it's a wide open competition. Like there's no sacred cows in any of those. You know, John Metchie's job is on the line. Xavier Hutchinson, they like, his job's on the line. The guys they brought in free agency are all 1 year, $2-3 million deal type of guys who have done things at times in the NFL, but there ain't anybody there who's gotten a big money contract where you go, well, we got to keep this guy, you know?
I'm looking at Eli Cox on his spider chart. It reminds me. It looks, if you just look at the colors, it looks a lot like a slot receiver where the all the speed drills are all pretty impressive, but then you get to the physical measurables for Eli Cox, and it's, you know, his wingspan, his arm length, his hand size, all 7th percentile, 1th percentile, 9th percentile.
Yeah.
He's got very short arms.
Yeah.
Which somehow has all become, it's almost become like a politically charged topic. Like, oh, don't you dare talk about somebody's arm length. You're an armist. Like, no.
Oh, yeah.
If you have short arms, you got to do something to make up for it. And Eli Cox, the center, struggled against size and power in college. So, like, yeah, you got to figure out a way to use technique and athleticism to overcome those elfin arms.
Kentucky, right? You went to Kentucky?
Yeah.
So who's it going to be? Who are you adopting? Here's the papers. Put in a name and sign at the bottom,
wait,
sir.
I'd like to. The early running has me for Junior Tafuna.
Okay.
But we'll have to wait until we get through. Let's wait until the first week of training camp.
Okay.
I got to see these guys just actually do, you know, doing actual football drills versus guys with shoulder pads.
The
on.
Orphanage of undrafted free agents, like looking at their watch with Seth, like, are you going to pick somebody here already? Are you going to pick?
Yeah, no. Listen, I'm a man of means. Yeah. I just take my time.
Yeah.
And until I'll adopt you when it's politically advantageous for me to adopt you.
The answer can be I don't adopt anybody. How do you like that,
right.
Orphanage?
Right.
All right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stop being so impatient. this is a follow up to the Mel Kiper being mad about Shedeur Sanders not being named the Pope. The Vatican talked. The Cardinals don't know how to evaluate a Pope. We do. I can't wait to play that audio at the top of the hour.
So this new Pope, he's from Chicago?
Yes. He went to Villanova, I believe.
Is he a sports fan?
Yeah, he's been spotted.
White Sox or Cubs?
White Sox.
He's a White Sox fan.
Yeah, okay. He's a White Sox fan. So he's tries to help support the poor, you know, White Sox in Chicago. They're the poor compared to the Cubs in their Wrigley Field with their big full bleachers and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So he went to Villanova. That was a big topic on my timeline yesterday because along the lines of the Mel Kiper and the sports angle to the Pope is like, how did Notre Dame let a Chicago kid slip away back during the evaluation period?
Yeah.
How did they let Pope slip away?
What do the Pope do? What do they do when they have conversations with all the? Because they're all from different nations and everything. Do they speak in Latin still? Like when they're having? Do they have to know Latin to be a Pope?
He spoke. What did he? He spoke in yesterday when he was speaking. He spoke in Italian and then in one other language, and I can't remember what it was. I don't know.
Do they speak Italian like when over there in Popeville when all the bishops are meeting with the Pope and everything?
It's a good question. Anybody
somebody tell us.
Intimate
I'm not
Pope
gonna Google it.
Yeah, intimate Pope knowledge. If you've got it, send it to us. 713-572-4610. Okay, I got to check during the break and see if this is true. Bill Belichick's girlfriend got banned from the UNC football facility. LOL. I need to check. That may not be true. It's a text. But I'm going to check this during the break, which would be a major development.
Looks like Italian is the official language of the Vatican.
There
makes
you go.
Sense, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know. Everything's so different in, around all that. I didn't want to just assume it was Italian.
Yep.
Yep. It's a Friday here in the Loop right here on Sports Radio 610. And you know what? Sound like a funky Friday too, don't it?
Yeah.
Hey, you love to see it. It's a good day, man. Hunter Brown gets on the mound to start for the Astros. They welcome in the Reds, and it'll be the first of a 17-game in 17-day stretch. It's going to be an interesting one, so that's a great thing to watch. The Texans right now out there at rookie minicamp. And Ocho made a great point on the text line talking about the fact that it is pleasant, downright pleasant outside.
It is.
And they
don't
are
get
getting
used to it,
they
fellas.
Are getting a false impression of what it's going to be like playing here in Houston.
Don't get used to it, fellas.
At least having the offseason in here in Houston. Because after tomorrow, right, with the end of rookie minicamp, it's 2 days. The next, I guess, technical day that they'll be, I guess, obliged to be here would be off-season workouts, OTAs, which is May 28th.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine that a lot of these guys are going to be here to some degree because it seems like the Texans have built that that environment where people remain.
Yeah.
But May 28th, and I mean, there's a little bit of a cold front in this next like week or so.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm no meteorologist, so don't take this for gospel. However, I imagine it'll be warm then.
94 degrees, 78% humidity, somewhere in there.
I wish the Texans social media people can just kind of go out there right now and be like, hey, how you feel about the Texans weather
what do you think
right
about
now?
Houston weather? Oh, it's great.
Yeah, you probably got some dudes like, oh, no, this is cool. I can handle this.
Oh, that'll be a fun before and after. Just get the first part
check
of the
back in June.
Yeah.
That'd be great. If somebody from the social media team is listening, please, we would appreciate that. Free of charge, by the way. Yeah.
Come on, Doug. Come on, Brandon. Over there in the social media, the marketing part, man. Let's get something going.
Also, we were talking about the Pope and what's popping, and we were asking what would be the funniest fan base, and our boss came in and was like, hey, wouldn't it be hilarious if he was a New Jersey Devils fan, a Tampa Bay Rays fan, and a Duke Blue Devils fan, maybe even an Arizona State fan?
Yeah. Let's go,
like,
Devils.
I was like, yeah, that would be
come
funny.
On.
He should have came out to Chief Keef, one of the Chief Keef songs, rapper from Chicago.
He is a rapper.
Finito.
Sosa. You know what I mean? That space. All right. Let's be serious, guys. Serious. Okay. We are 5 days away, by my count on the calendar, from official schedule release time. I know that for some people, that is a real big, real fun time. You start looking at what's coming down the pike, what ultimately you can plan for. Some people start putting that money down on hotels and flights and such.
Yeah.
And one of the things heading into that is leaks.
We have leaks.
You're starting to get leaks.
Yeah.
And so, you know, what are we seeing, Lopez, Mr. Schedule Man himself, that you were interested in?
It's just so funny how much I enjoy schedule leaks and then the schedule release. I mean, you can just do so much. You can have a lot of fun with it. You find out, you kind of break down the schedule, and we will.
It's like putting together a puzzle.
It is. And this game is going to be, or this stretch, or however you play it.
When the last time you did a puzzle?
It hadn't been a year.
Do people still mess around with puzzles?
Well, okay, so when we go down to the coast for long stretches, my wife likes to do them.
Are you not a puzzle guy?
I'll put in like two or three pieces, then I get bored, you know, but she'll sit there and do the, like,
what's up with your attention span, dog?
It's not there.
but you fish, though.
I'll fish for 7 hours.
That's why fishing is not, fishing ain't no short attention span activity.
With puzzles is boring.
Don't compare fishing and puzzles.
713-572-4610. Are puzzles boring?
No. I mean, yes.
his actual answer deep down inside leapt out right quick.
I thought you were saying fishing. All right, so
puzzle haters.
I'm a big fan of the schedule leaks. I have, and we've talked about it the last couple of years. There's a couple of really credible and reliable, as much as you can be, you know, schedule leak accounts out there that sort of get everything and put it in one place. So here's where we are, and as you mentioned, it's going to be Wednesday. Are you guys ready for either the Steelers? I'm going to give you the lead right away. I'm not going to bury the lead.
Thank you.
I think either the Steelers or the Texans are going to play in Brazil to open the season. And there's a lot of things pointing to that.
Yeah, please, because I'm interested in hearing why those two teams, and you already know that I am very much prefer them to not play in Brazil if there's an option to play a division game overseas.
Okay, and that's funny you say that because I'm going to circle back to that. I'm starting to warm up to the idea of Brazil as the opener.
Okay.
Not that I want it, but I'm warming up to it.
Because you want to go to Brazil then?
No, I'll get to that. I'll tell you exactly why I think it might be a good thing.
You want to see the sights and the vistas?
Yeah. Hall pass? No.
Calm down.
See some of them BBLs.
Look, you, with the things that you put your wife through, you better not ask for no kinds of passes. You better not pass go when playing Monopoly.
This is true. All right, so the leaks that we have so far are going to tie in with this. And just, it's good information because most of these tend to be pretty reliable. The leaks that we have so far for the overseas, the international games, are Commanders at Dolphins in Madrid, November 16th.
So you like that game?
It's not bad.
I think I like that game.
It's not bad.
Commanders, Dolphins.
Shout out to Germany actually getting, well, you said Berlin, right?
Madrid.
Madrid, sorry. Shout out to Spain actually getting a good Yeah, because sometimes I feel bad. It feels like we export our worst games overseas at times.
Jaden Daniels, all that good stuff.
Yes, sir.
Colts at Falcons as of today has been leaked by a couple of people. Now, again, leaked, not official, but I think some of the people here are pretty credible. Colts at Falcons in Berlin.
Okay.
And that would be week 10. Okay. Vikings at Browns, October 5th, is another one that's been leaked. Broncos at Jets, October 11th. Rams at Chargers, October 19th. All three of those are in London. Two at Tottenham Hotspur.
Wow, so you're having an L.A. matchup, but not in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
That's wild, because that feels like the one.
No, did I say Chargers?
You said Rams at Chargers,
no,
right?
No, it's not Chargers. Rams, because the Chargers are the Brazil game. It's the Rams will be going out there. I'll get you the exact.
No problem. We could skip over that. I was just fascinated because, yeah, with that mistake, that puts both L.A. teams on overseas in a way that I was like, that feels like one of those games you would want to have in that building to make sure that it is packed to the gills.
Yeah. No. That one is not the case. I misspoke on that, and I'll get to that in just a second. So it's going to be the Rams at Jacksonville.
Oh, okay.
Rams at Jacksonville, because Jacksonville plays in London. I wrote down the wrong thing.
No problem.
All right, so that narrows it down a little bit. And let me explain that. The fact that these leaks have come out kind of narrows it down in terms of the Texans are going to have a bigger possibility of playing in Brazil.
Because the two division games that you were looking at that are, you know, because again, to make this more clear, we know who the host teams are going to be in all of these various international
games. Jacksonville's going to host.
Right, Jacksonville's going to host one in London. Mm-hmm. And then the Colts were hosting. Where are they hosting again?
Colts at Falcons in Berlin.
Berlin, correct. Okay. And
Vikings at Browns, as I said. So
those are
the ones that have been leaked as of today.
Those are the because we always know who the teams are that these teams are going to play. But not even just in general when you're building a schedule. Before the schedule actually comes out, you know who the teams are. Because the way that the NFL schedule is built, it's formulaic.
Right.
You play six games against your division mates, and then you play some other games against
another, have the list of teams.
Right. You know exactly which divisions you're playing in a given year. And then there's a couple more, or there's two additional games. Yes, two additional games that are based off of your positioning in your conference or in your division, right? You can surmise all of that very simply.
Yeah.
So you know which teams are in the pool to play those guys. And once you see the, you know, who's hosting, then you know, okay, there's only three teams that the Texans have on their schedule that are hosting.
Right.
And now the leaks are saying that two of those are going to be a different game.
Right. And I'm glad you mentioned that, because the only teams the Chargers could face in Brazil are the Raiders, which is a division game and more unlikely.
Yeah, they try not to have those internationally.
Broncos, which the leak just said is going to be playing the Jets, so it won't be the Broncos.
Yeah, because it's unlikely for them to have multiple international games.
Chiefs, Commanders, which if the leak is correct, it isn't going to be the Commanders because they're going to Madrid. Texans, Vikings. It's not going to be the Vikings if this leak is correct because they're at the Browns.
Yeah.
And Steelers. So it's as much as it's not a hard and fast rule, we're getting it kind of narrowed down to the Steelers and Texans, and let me explain why. It's not a hard and fast rule, but they generally don't play a division game in these international games. They have, but they generally don't. So you can certainly scratch the Broncos because they're going overseas elsewhere. Raiders and Chiefs are in play, but are they going to play a division game? More than likely not. Broncos played overseas in 2022. Chiefs played overseas in 2023. Commanders are already going to face the Dolphins in Madrid, so you can likely scratch them. Scratch the Vikings, and if the leak is true that they'll play the Browns in London, is true that anyway. So that leaves the Colts. They just have been announced.
They're hosting one.
In Berlin. That leaves the Colts, Steelers, and Texans. So it kind of just leaves the Steelers and Texans as the most likely teams to play in Brazil. And by the way, the Texans have not played overseas since 2019. This is where it gets a little interesting. The Steelers have not played overseas since 2013.
Okay, so Steelers are going then.
Could be the Steelers, could be the Texans.
Would you prefer an overseas game or not having an overseas game this year?
Well, I'd always prefer not having an overseas game, but you do have to play one every 8 years at minimum as of a couple of years ago. So this is where I was going to circle back to. I'm kind of warming up to the Texans opening in Brazil, as much as an inconvenience as that will be, because for a couple of reasons. Number one, you're going to have plenty of lead up Go ahead.
Somebody, Andy, our guy, Engineer Andy, letting us know on the YouTube page and a text line also coming in. Steelers are in Dublin, supposedly.
Oh, that's right.
Last year?
They're in Dublin this year?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Oh.
And so if that's the case, then.
Ooh, then it's the Texans.
You're really opening up to the possibility to open up. And I'm interested in that because, especially opening up the season there. There's a lot of questions about this team for week one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of week one questions, which is, how has this offensive line come together? Have they gelled over training camp? How are your rookies going to, you know, ingratiate themselves? And especially, I imagine, Jaden Higgins, who mm-hmm. is probably the most likely of your rookies to be a major factor in all of this. How has Nick Caley like come along, and how is that? And not to say that those would not be questions in week one generally,
yeah.
but you just add the additional element of travel and a lack of familiarity with the mm-hmm. place. And then what you also talked about, which circles back around to the offensive line as well. What is the turf quality like?
Sure.
And when you think about it, I think I was watching like a reel at one point or mm-hmm. so, a video about Mason Graham, the new Browns defensive tackle mm-hmm. and him getting his equipment. These guys are going to have probably some pretty specialized or really the equipment staff is going to have to be on their P's and Q's
yeah.
for the offensive line with all the traction that you need to generate like an entirely new offensive line with all of the mental sides of mm-hmm. it, but also the physical sides of it. If that turf, like there's a lot of things that could make this more difficult against a team in the Chargers that isn't a bad one.
There are a lot of reasons, and you just, you know, outlined some why I don't really want it, but if it's going to happen, I don't mind it being the Chargers, and I don't mind it being in Brazil for a couple of reasons. Number one, you have an entire lead up that you can prepare for that.
Sure.
and all the, you know, things that are possible out there and all the preparation and all that. You get there early and you're not coming off a game, so you have plenty of time to prepare. And the second reason is it's a Friday night game. It's a Friday game in Brazil, so that gives you a little extra time coming back and playing, you know, presumably a home game, you know, to open coming off of that. So if you're to believe the leaks, Commanders, they're out. Colts, they're out. The Broncos, they're out. I'm talking in terms of who the teams that the Chargers could play.
Sure.
You just mentioned Steelers. I'd forgotten about that. They would be out. I mean, just go down the list. Then unless they play the Raiders, unless they play a division game to open the season in Brazil, it's looking very likely that it's going to be the Texans.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I guess if I'm trying to find my level of happiness with this, it would be, well, you get an international game, you could tick that off the ledger, and according mm-hmm. to that rule that you're kind of stating, the NFL is, I guess, de facto putting in place.
Yeah.
That would kind of inoculate you from having a home game on the road, which I know
sure.
I'm sure the team would very much not want. And I imagine Houstonians would not want. Don't take one of my 8 or 9 that I have here and put it elsewhere around the world. We want to have that at NRG with the home fans being able to tailgate and all those things. And I feel like that buys you more time if yeah. you're playing an international game that you don't have to host.
It's it really, again, I generally, hey, do you want them to play? No. But it's looking like it could be the Texans more and more every day.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll watch that space, and we will get a good answer as to whether or not the leaks are right and if the Texans might be starting their season saluting Christ the Redeemer statue and spending a little time in Brazil. It's Sao Paulo, though, ain't it?
Sao Paulo.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I was about to say. All yeah. right. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us. And, yes, you're right, 8-3-2. It would also be a playoff rematch, 100%. Although obviously, you know, from the playoffs to the next season, a lot of difference in all of that. All right. Which of the, if any rather, of the now former Texans after this offseason is largely in the books? Well, I mean, when it comes to the moves, obviously yeah. there's still opportunities to do anything at any given time, which speaking of, people are pointing to the idea of the text line where they go, the Panthers released Clowney. Could you have a reunion? You
want to answer that? That's a no.
Like, is it any room?
that would be a no.
Like, just throwing him in a pass rushing room. Mm-hmm. We're just like, hey, you are another one in here. I can't see that.
Yeah, I don't see it.
That would not happen.
I also don't know exactly what. I don't know exactly that he would want to be in that deep of a pass rushing circumstance, but I mean that's right, not
maybe, but I don't think it's going
to
happen.
Yeah, unless he want to take like a small
role, yeah.
Yeah, deal maybe, at that point it's a family move. Mm-hmm. My family want to go back to Houston.
Yeah.
Well, it might be a small family move. Because yeah. He said that the Panthers play was a family move to go home, right? Like to yeah. be in that state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I say family move thinking like, oh, maybe his family want to go back to Houston because they've been here for a little bit. So
I'll say again, no.
That's stretching right there.
Yeah, I was like, no. I think you are pretty damn good when it comes to pass rush. But anyways, you've made plenty of moves and some people have left this team. Are you? Do you envision a situation in which you'll miss some of these guys? And if so, who do you think you would miss the most? Who do you think this Texas team will miss the most as they're moving into the 2025 season?
Let's also crowdsource this a little bit because
713-572-4610.
Yeah, like I loved everything. I it's hard to complain about much of anything that they've done this offseason. You know, even
hard to complain.
You could complain about a couple things. But,
there we go. I just wanted to make sure that you had it in there.
But it's still hard to complain. But I started thinking, okay, what about 6 weeks, 10 weeks into the year? Do you think we're going to miss any of these cats that they moved on from? Let me give you a couple of names, and I want to get your reaction.
There was no one name that came in immediately on the YouTube page, by the way.
Laramie Tunsil?
John Weeks was the first one that came in.
I think it's a possibility.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All it takes is one bad snap.
One
bad snap, and we going to be sitting here like, man.
They brought in two dudes, one street free agent, undrafted, and Addington, whatever his name.
You made him Paddington Bear.
I made him a bear.
That's a wild name.
But honestly, if there was going to be, if you were going to be confused with some animated character, Paddington's a pretty good one. Yeah. Like, Paddington is universally beloved, so that's not going to be a problem. But no, it's Tucker Addington that you're thinking of. And then Austin Brinkman is the undrafted free agent that they brought in as well.
Don't you feel that John Weeks is one of the possibilities you could miss?
It is, mm-hmm. But I think that probably speaks more to the idea that I don't know how much I'm going to miss some of these other cats. Because also, look, how much do you actually think about your long snapper? And I say mm-hmm. that with all due respect to a man who was flawless
yeah.
in his time here, John Weeks. Like, obviously, salute to him in mm-hmm. San Francisco. Hope that he continues to do well. And yes, there are some instances, relatively rare, in fact, pretty damn rare, where you'll see a long snapper put the ball too high and now you're mm-hmm. missing extra points or what have you, or field goals. But I'm not all that concerned about that. Maybe this is just me being being callous
yeah.
or being flippant about this and not thinking about the importance of the long snapper. And that's fair. I'll wear that if I have to. But I recognize what he brings. I just don't know that I'll get to a place where I'm like, damn, that really stinks. Well, at least on the football field.
Yeah, I think it could affect, especially if it's like field goals, if Kaimi is, you know, I don't want to say he's struggling, but if the snap is not right.
Even low, it bounces in.
Yeah, like
this is a big field goal.
See, I told you on the break, I felt like we've been a little spoiled mm-hmm. over the years. And we haven't went through anything like that in a long time.
Yeah.
So I think something small like that, we could be like, oh, man, like this snapper is really struggling out here.
Well, something even smaller is just the pace at which the ball gets to the punter. You know, or the kick, the holder. And that's not something that we can, you know, immediately say, well, that was a slow snap. But, you know, they have the advanced analytics. They have the data, the stopwatch, if you will, on every one of these snaps. If it's just a tiny bit slow and something gets blocked.
Yeah.
That's a, I miss John Weeks moment because he was quick with that
snap.
And
the thing is, we might not mention it. We might blame it on other people. Right. But after a while, you might be like, man, like the ball ain't really get there as fast as it should, or it was a little bit high, or it was a little bit low.
Okay, all right. So there's a strong case that you guys are making for John Weeks. Who else do you have? Because I can immediately tell you some of the people that it won't be. And I say this with all due respect for the the things that they have brought to this team. It's not going to be an offensive lineman when it comes to. It's not going to be Kenyon Green, especially because. I think the place
even if he's good in Philly, like I don't think we'd be
because,
like
because I think if he's good in Philly, you could probably point directly to Stoutland and go, well, yes, this is a place where they were able to rehabilitate him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we probably blame the coaching on that.
That's where I'm going with it.
Yeah,
so there's that, and then Shaq Mason.
You're not going to miss Shaq Mason.
And I appreciate what he brought, but you saw the slowdown. Yeah. And I don't think there's going to be a place where I go, damn, if Shaq Mason was in that place.
No.
Because, yes, with Kenyon Green and Shaq Mason and the offensive line in general last year, there was a lot of stuff that you could very reasonably link back to Bobby Slowick and the mm-hmm. scheme that they had and the miscommunications that they had, which clearly had to have happened by not, you know, having the right implementation or what have you. But there was also some stuff where dudes just got flat out beat. And Shaq Mason was very much one of those. Yeah. Kenyon Green was very much another one.
No, Kenyon Green absolutely was. Here's where I would just toss something in here with Kenyon Green.
Please.
If he becomes a starter in Philadelphia, starts 15, 16, 17 games, whatever it is. That's not I miss him, but I think it's a reflection on this team.
I agree with that.
You know, I think fans would not say, oh, I miss Kenyon Green, but the conversation would be, what are we doing with our linemen? You know, yeah, especially if this lineman is pedestrian, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. I hear you on that. Mm-hmm. So I think those ones, I'm not going to be in that space.
Like, what about Laramie, though? That's an interesting one to me.
That's the one I was thinking about.
That was my answer out the box.
Yeah.
I think that was my answer out the box. However, there's another one that's popped up
mm-hmm.
on one of these apparatuses that we have where people can get involved with the program that I'll bring up. But no, absolutely, Laramie Tunsil was one of those, or was the one for me, because yes, I get it. The text that came in earlier that said, we going to miss Laramie Tunsil and all them false starts. I get it. Mm-hmm. That was something that was there that admittedly got better over time. He's still a great pass blocker. He's still a great pass blocker with a offensive line that has some dudes that I do wonder how the pass block ultimately goes, including Cam Robinson specifically, who's stepping in for him. I always remember that Nate Tice of Yahoo Sports, when the Texans made that signing, tweeted out something that got me going, which was that Cam Robinson allowed the highest one-on-one pressure rate amongst all tackles last year once he became the starter in Minnesota.
Yeah.
Now, of course, that does erase his time in Jacksonville, which I don't think he was bad, but it did look real bad in Minnesota, his most recent stop, and you're signing him up to be that guy on the left side who was going to have one-on-one instances. And you know who was pretty good in one-on-one instances blocking? Laramie Tunsil.
Yeah. No, I have to believe that there are people in that building, as much as they tried their best to bring in adequate, hopefully the unit, all five parts will, work in unison, as they like to say, and it'll be a good offensive line. Hopefully that's the case. But I have to believe there are people in that building that at some level they're going, that was a top three pass blocker.
Absolutely.
That was like, we hated the false starts, hated some of the things he did. We hated the effect maybe, and I'm speculating, on the room, the offensive line room. But when it came to pass blocking, he was top three in the NFL. There's got to be a level of, we might miss that.
Yeah, especially like seeing all the courts and all that stuff he kind of go through, we got to deal with.
Yeah.
He was still protecting CJ, man.
Yeah.
So I think it would hurt even more if you see him in Washington doing this thing, probably trying to get another contract.
Yeah.
But doing this thing, it's like, man, we in week 10 and CJ
still running.
Yeah. Maybe Cam do a good job, but when if it's a thing where they just shuffling through left tackles, and then man.
That's the question. Like, do you think there's a situation down the road where you'll miss any of the guys? The one that is interesting to me is Stephon Diggs.
Agreed.
I don't know if there's a scenario. Well, there is going to be a scenario that you could miss him, but Stephon Diggs, healthy, was pretty dang good here. And you got a couple of rookies that you have high hopes on, and is that going to work? Could you see, again, 5-10 weeks into the season where it's like, ooh, Stephon sure could have helped this squad?
I mean, it's possible, but I feel good about the idea that you have a lot of talent here. But yeah, having more of an experienced guy that is great about just showing to the quarterback and being a little bit of a security blanket.
Yeah.
Right? I think that the quarterbacks often need that. Now, this is going to be a place where C.J. Stroud, as he's growing into that fullness of being one of the better quarterbacks in this league, maybe there's less of a need for a particular security blanket, and maybe, he's in that place where he'll find that, whether it's getting it to his running back or, the connection with his tight end, whether it's Dalton or Cade, will continue to be that for him. But it did feel like he had a nice rapport with
they were boys, man.
With Stephon Diggs, who had taken over a role that it felt like he had with Tank Dell the year prior. So I'm interested to see who he develops that with. I'm sure that he'll be able to, but I could see an instance where you go, okay, that comfort and that know-how that Stephon Diggs had is not there. But I think that's part of why it was important to have a Christian Kirk who has a level of experience as well,
yeah,
who comes in.
Yeah, because, you know, obviously Higgins and Noel, you're feeling good about them, at least at this point. But after that, it's Nico and Christian Kirk.
So the name that came up on the text line, or the YouTube page, rather, and I found it very interesting. They said, outside of Weeks, this is Isai on the YouTube page, Case Keenum.
Hmm.
Right? And obviously, Case Keenum did not touch the field last year. In fact, he was injured all of last year. But one of the roles that he serves in that locker room and as an advocate for CJ was huge.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I think we're starting to see that CJ maybe was not as heard as ultimately he probably would have wanted to be. And I think that we're seeing already that he's going to have more of a role. But I do kind of like the idea of having that big bro in that room to also keep giving him that game.
Yeah.
And obviously Case isn't going to be here this year. And I mean, that's one of those things that's a little bit more intangible that we can't see,
that's
but
it.
I do
that's
think
the
it
intangible.
Matters.
No, that's where I was going, because as much as, you know, CJ has this amazing, you know, relationship with Gerard Johnson, I think that's going to help. As much as the new coordinator, Nick Caley, you know, I'm sure, you know, is prioritizing building that with CJ Stroud. It's different when it's another player in the room, like in the locker room. Coaches aren't in there all the time. To have, you know, Case Keenum as that sounding board. Maybe CJ Stroud is kind of past needing that at this point.
It's possible.
You know?
It is.
But he was valuable. There's no question.
All right. So the other ones that have come in, well, this is a not. They said not Chris Boyd, which fair. I was tired of seeing them yellow flags on special teams. Like, hey man, come on,
yeah.
Lock in. Mm-hmm. Also, I just love the depth that they've added secondary wise to this point. But somebody said on the real, I'm gonna miss Tank. Does Tank count? Tank Dell, who's likely not gonna play during the season. I can't say for certain, right?
Well, I don't mind that. I mean, you
would count that one?
Yeah, I would count that.
Are there any other ones that are possibilities in here that we did not talk about?
Well, none of them were any good to begin with that I could see that have left. But it is interesting with Tunsil, just because as much as we all gave, including myself, such a hard time, one thing he did, man, one thing he did was protect that backside.
And from the 832, the question of the offseason, really, I've seen multiple of those kind of what is the question, one question remaining for this team post-draft, and everyone for the Texans is just, how is this line going to come together? Yeah. Is it going to be better than last year? And so for the 8-3-2, do you think that some of the pieces of this new offensive line will be better than the old talent?
Some of the pieces will be better than the old talent. You know, I'm talking about left tackle. I just feel the sheer numbers.
You say that with a level of certainty.
I do. I mean, I think the sheer numbers and the new coach and the new system and the new way to block, there are going to be some good fits there, you know, I feel. Now, I don't know if that means the whole line is going to be an upgrade or not, but yeah, I think there's some guys that can get it done.
And that's a fair point. 8-3-2. Nobody said Robert Woods here.
I actually thought about him.
I thought about that too. I miss seeing him around. I feel like he's been around long enough now.
Mm-hmm.
We were like, dang, Robert Woods ain't here.
Yeah.
Last year, it didn't feel like he made a significant impact, no, even when you needed him.
Mm-hmm. Nah, he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel like going into this that the wide receiver room has more guys that can make an impact? And it might be wild to say that because, I mean, two of the guys that might be in there are two of the guys that were there that weren't or that weren't like super impactful. When you talk about Mechie Hutchinson, I guess was more impactful in some ways. Berrios, who I don't know if he's even like really and truly a wide receiver for you. He might just kind of be a return type guy. Justin Watson. We'll be interested to see what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got a couple of rookies in there that I don't know that you can guarantee what their impact is going to be. I think that I like the idea of what the impact could be.
Yeah.
But how do you feel about that compared? Because last year we came
into
camp.
How'd you put it? That could make be better?
Will be more impactful comparatively.
Yeah, I think if you say they're going to be more impactful, I think you're more optimistic than realistic. You know, you have to wait to see what these guys. We don't know anything about Higgins and Noel.
I mean, we know some things, but...
No, in terms of, like, at this level, how they're going to play,
okay,
you know, et cetera. Christian Kirk and Nico, sure. I feel very good about that. I mean, I wouldn't have a lot of confidence in these other guys until I see it, you know?
I do feel like they'll be more impactful also, and this is where I come back to the idea of I don't know what the scheme is going to be, but it does feel like it'll be more considerate towards what CJ likes and the feel that he can determine. And I think just in general, when you come up to the line and you can determine what the defense is doing and audible and situate things better,
I think
that'll give guys better opportunities to get separation and get the ball. And one of the other guys we did not mention from the 8-3-2, Eric Murray. I'll be happy with C.J. Gardner-Johnson and Jimmy
Ward. That.
I will absolutely take that.
Yeah, he overstayed his welcome.
And I was one of the people that tried to be nicer to Eric Murray last year. But best of luck to you in Jacksonville, brother. Best of luck to you there. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you hanging out with us.
All right, if you just missed it, Hayden Wisniewski, who has been a really important piece to the pitching staff, as he's been one of the best players coming out of that Kyle Tucker trade they've had. He goes on the IL, and Tyler said it right, man, with right elbow discomfort. And that is that scary one. That is that, you know, are we talking like, are we talking UCL? Are we talking, you know, the dreaded Tommy John? What does that mean? Whenever you kind of see right elbow discomfort, that's immediately the concern of where many folks go. So that's one to keep an eye on. And the reason why we say that, and I know that's why Tyler had that trembling in his voice, is and we've heard the elbow discomfort a few times. We've heard it from 0-3 technique, Luis Garcia, elbow discomfort. We've heard elbow discomfort from Christian Javier. We've heard elbow discomfort multiple times from Lance McCullers.
Get to the big one.
We heard elbow discomfort from Justin Verlander. We've heard and seen elbow discomfort, and hopefully this is not something that is that is major, but that is the growing concern there with Hayden Wisniewski, and it really is a shame. He's been really, really good for the Astros, a lot better than you would think and would expect from a fifth starter.
Well, yeah, and like you mentioned, with the injuries, you ended up depending on him a little bit more than you would have liked to have needed to. Then he performs well, and you're like, hell, man, we may have got something. And then you start talking about the Kyle Tucker trade, and not that it's ever going to work out, like and the Astros winning when you start talking about talent for talent, but we could at least look at it as an Astros fan and go, hey, it worked out for us. We got some you know, some guys back that are helping us win games, and Wisniewski was definitely one of those guys, you know, along with Paredes and Cam Smith. So you know, hopefully it's not, you know, the worst, and hopefully he gets back and he can help us win some games this year and beyond.
Yeah, so that's the latest there. Hayden Wisniewski placed on the IL with right elbow discomfort. So that is the latest there. All right, Clint, as we are live here at Big Ben Tavern here in Sugar Land, I'm seeing people coming out. I'm seeing bugs around. I see Figgy Fig out here. I know Reggie was on his way out here. So come on out. See some of your favorite 610 Sports Radio 610 personalities, and come hang out with us for a little bit. All right, Clint, I wanted to get into this with you a bit, kind of based off the conversation we had yesterday with people about Nick Caserio. Or I'm sorry, Nick Caley. And one of the big things we were hearing was, hey, man, the things that they were excited about is his identity. He's going to have an identity in a way that maybe this team didn't have one offensively previously. And I know it was at points of view that looked at it and said, hey, he don't need to be setting no tone. That's none of that. Like, that should be on D'Amico. But the identity, and many people were confident with the identity of what Nick Caley is. For me, Clint, I kind of check up on that because I really don't know what – you know, what kind of offense he runs, what kind of identity he is going to push forth. We've seen and saw who he's been under with Sean McVay and Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick, but still not really sure what he is going to do. What do you think? What do you think the identity is going to be under Nick Caley's offense? Like, because the closest thing we've heard, Clint, is in his press conference, he said, this scheme will be designed around my players and not my scheme. So that's the closest thing we could hear from it. But what do you think, watching the game, kind of understanding who he's been under, what do you think his identity is going to be for the team?
Well, I think it's going to be a tall task for him to not only be a great offensive coordinator, but be one that can switch his offense up to best fit the players that we have. Now, Does he fit the players that we have? And does where he came from and his scheme fit the players that we have? And I think it does. Significantly better than Bobby Slowick's system. If you look, you don't need to go any further than if you look at the Rams and with Matthew Stafford and or Jared Goff, either way it goes, you've got a more of a spread offense that is quarterback dependent. You look at New England's, even when New England was making their runs, you're talking again about a spread offense that's quarterback dependent. And not only quarterback dependent in how they perform, but also quarterback dependent in how they can process the game at a high level. I think then you switch, and if you look at what was going on, what's gone on in San Francisco, I would say that offense is more predicated on the play caller, the physicality, the run game than it is the quarterback. Not minimizing Brock Purdy, not taking anything away from him. I just think if you're comparing the two offenses, that is the difference. And then you look at what Houston has, and it's C.J. Stroud. It is, I would say, a pass-receiving tight end, a back that should be a back that played most of his career in a spread, but should be a guy that can affect the game in the pass game as well as a run game. You're four or five wide receivers deep. You got a couple of different slot receivers. So this should be, assuming it's more Rams New England than San Francisco, it should be a better fit for C.J. Stroud. I've said this for years. With C.J. Stroud, I believe you need to live in 11 personnel. Three wide receivers, one tight end, one running back. I've said it for years. With C.J. Stroud, I think you need to be a more wide-open spread offense that is going to get mismatches versus block everybody up and throw the big ball over the top, right? With C.J. Stroud, we now know that he is an elite processor of the game of football. Let him play the game in a Brady way. Let him communicate. Let him identify. Let him decide whether he needs to throw hot or he doesn't need to throw hot. Put all the weight on his shoulders, and I think if you look at what New England did and you look at what L.A. does with Stafford and did with what was my buddy's name in Detroit? Mine just went blank. Quarterback in Detroit.
Oh, Jared Goff.
Jared Goff. That is more the lane C.J. Stroud is in versus Jimmy Garoppolo, Brock Purdy, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah.
And to be honest, to be fair to Bobby Slowick, that is the C.J. Stroud that we saw in year one. It was more like what we've seen, spreading the football around, getting out of your hands quick, making the right decision in year one. It just cratered in year two.
I'm trying to envision a New England Rams mashup. I'm trying, as you said, is it going to be more New England Rams than Niners? Because I think there are some people who thought that more Niners Rams were in the same family as, you know, well, with McVay.
They're definitely in the family. But when you're talking about quarterbacks and you're talking about approach, I would like for, like, I look at the Rams offense, I would say a much more aggressive pushing the ball down the field with the ability to do that because your quarterback has that skill set, right? I looked at Brady, not necessarily the arm to push it down the field, got to be a little bit more calculated when he takes his risk and takes less risk. I would like to see C.J. Stroud live in the middle somewhere. But to me, it starts with the Brady approach, and then his ability tells you, okay, now we can go take shots. Right, but you can't do it backwards. You can't go, hey, he's got this ability to drive the football down the field like Matthew Stafford does, who's been in the league for 42 years and has taken 8 million hits and never won anything with that approach until he got to McVay. Like, you got to start by playing the Brady ball. You got to start by being smart and protecting yourself, and you pick and choose when you want to drive it down the field.
All right, welcome back in to The Drive. As we are rolling here on a Thursday, we appreciate everybody jumping in. I do have a dilemma I need to get to at some point today.
Need to come to the bros?
Yeah, to the bros.
The Drive family.
Drive family. Sally, all the other ladies that listen need to come to it.
Man, woman, or child, right?
Yeah, Harry, Jen, Lauren, Mac. All the other women who listen to the show, they can chime in and help us out as well. But I do have a dilemma. I talked to Clint about it a little bit, but we need to bring it to the air.
in this yeah, where
probably,
it's going.
Probably on the safe side not to take my advice on stuff like that wholeheartedly. Probably ought to poll the audience.
All right. Todd McShay, who is now at the Ringer now, formerly at ESPN. He was talking about Jalen Knoll, and he is a big fan of him. But I want you to kind of hear the commentary. And this is somebody we've talked about. We're excited potentially of what he could bring to the table because he could do a little bit of everything coming out of Iowa State where they got in the third round. But this is how Todd McShay had to describe parts of his game.
Those are the reasons. Short arms, short, small catch radius, had some drops, five muff punts. You add all those things up, and you're looking at a smaller catch radius guy who, yes, is explosive, but I can't count in the first two rounds I want to get someone I believe is going to be a starter, and I'd like to draft my slot starter eventually if that's what he is in the third. And they got Jaden Hayden.
All right, there he is. They talked. We've talked a lot about some of the stuff we're excited about, Clint. Of like, hey man, he can bring that speed element from jet sweeps to screens to, you know, being able to shake loose quickly in coverage. It could be somebody that he could get to. We talked a lot about him, but Todd McShay kind of went the other way, Clint, of things that could be a factor for him. Any of those concerns? Concerns about what he could maybe bring to the tape.
Yeah, no, look, I mean, to be clear, Todd McShay is extremely high on Jalen Knoll. I mean, He is extremely high on him. Some reasons why he may have slid, which I'd be thankful for because he landed with the Texans. But I feel like the right thing to do is not just talk all about the positives. When some negatives start to kind of surface, got to hit those as well. And look, I'll be honest with you, there's not one thing that Todd McShay said right there that concerns me about Knoll.
Do you think they're all legit?
I'm sure he's not. I don't think Todd McShay's a smoke blower. I think those are all things that could be viewed as flaws in his game over his entire career. I saw Seth Payne on his Twitter, he had posted some improvements of Jalen Knoll in terms of drop. The drop rate went way down throughout his career, so it got significantly better. He's never going to be a guy with a huge catch radius because he's a smaller player. I think there's been a handful of those ever at the NFL level that were smaller players that had the ability to climb the ladder and go get the same ball that a 6'4 receiver would go get. So I think that would be out of pocket to claim that he had that. So he's got a smaller catch on, he's a smaller player, shorter arms, not worried about it. My point with this is one, I have zero concerns about what may or may not have caused the slide for Jalen Knoll in the draft. I have zero concern about what Todd McShay said. I fully expect these are all things that the offensive play caller, the schemer, the play designer should be able to overcome. If they are legit flaws, right, and you find a way to put that guy in a position to play to his strengths, I think great coaches do it every year, whether it's because it's a young player and you're not ready to just throw the whole playbook at him, you want him to play fast so you start with a small package, or you use him a certain way because he's truly limited. He's not something not about learning the offense and getting experience. He's just truly limited. Either way it goes, he is an absolute weapon for Nick Caley, and Nick Caley's got to find the best way to deploy him. The good thing is he's got options. You've got a true, savvy, veteran slot in Christian Kirk. You got two big-bodied wide receivers outside that can go get them 50-50 balls if you need them to. There is a need here for that weapon. There's a need here for a guy that is a little mixed bag, that Swiss Army knife, if you will. And Nick, it's Nick Caley's job to find a way to get that guy the ball and help him impact games this year.
Yeah, I'm not concerned about those. First, I think those are legit, but I think those are just things that I can relate to. Hell, he just can't help some of them.
Right.
All right? I mean, but the point is, have we seen guys, and the audience, you could listen to and answer this to yourself, have we seen guys his size be successful?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Absolutely.
Generally, those guys that are his size generally don't have a great catch radius. generally aren't big, right? But the one thing we didn't hear him say is, well, he struggles to separate.
Mm-hmm.
He lacks explosiveness. See, when you're that small, And I think this is probably an issue with John Metchie at times in his career. When you're that small and you don't have a huge catch radius and we can't just go throw the ball up to you and you're not just like DeAndre Hopkins, just open, then you got to have that other stuff. And as he said, hell, in there, he said, yeah, I know he's explosive. Oh, that's all I got to say. Yeah. That's all I need. Because we have seen guys his size that were explosive work. And the other point of this is, Clint, Jalen Knoll, and listen, I don't mean to put him in a box because there have been guys that have broken out of this, but the odds that Jalen Knoll is ever going to be thought to have to be the number one receiver on this team are very, very low.
Yeah.
Like, not going to happen. And to me, that means he has a role. And, yeah, I want my number one receiver to have the ability to move away and do other things. But him, man, his size and catch radius doesn't matter because there's a specific thing that I'm looking for him to do, and I think he can easily fill that void. So those things are legit, Clint, but I'm with you. They're nothing that scare me off.
Well, and I'll go – they don't scare me at all either. I'll go back to what I said originally when Nick Caley was hired and they started kind of leaning towards – this and mentioning this New England style of offense. Hopefully, and we'll see. We'll see how this all works out. But hopefully one of the differences between last year's offense and this year's offense, hopefully there's several, but one thing that we as fans should I hope to see it is you've got actual receivers that have positions. They're not positionless, right? Nico is an outside receiver. Right, Higgins, outside receiver. Christian Kirk's an inside receiver. Jalen Knoll, inside receiver, or some level of a weapon that you can use in packages and in different ways. Hopefully we see more of that and less of everybody can do all things. And so hopefully, again, that the only reason I say that is because that puts Knoll into the slot weapon box, which is, I think, squarely where he fits.
Right, yeah, and they're – like, the stuff that Todd was bringing up were things that you expect from, like, one of your, like, top two receivers, right? And I see on the text line, I see Ocho saying Steve Smith Sr. was shorter and probably slower than Knoll. As I said, I know there are probably some – there are outliers, yeah, right? Yeah. But even then, like, when they brought Steve Smith – and, of course, again, nobody is telling Noel or Knoll that he has to have a ceiling. But – when they brought in Steve Smith, I don't know, they brought in Steve Smith thinking like, our plan is for him to be our number one receiver. I think they brought him in here as, hey man, he's going to be a piece that we can do a lot of different things with. And if Knoll does that, then he does that. But I don't think that's the expectation. I think the reason why he slides like that, Clint, is because of, like, there's not a thought that he has the body type that you would look at and say, that's what I want in a number one receiver. I think that's why he slide. But if you're talking about a guy that's a third receiver that is a slot guy that does, you know, jet sweeps and does things like that, that sounds just like a third rounder. That sounds like to me. That sounds like exactly where he should be in the draft.